You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, are you watching for signs of spring in your backyard? You know, there are certain signs of spring and changes of season that always happen. Maybe you've got some of your favorite. I know here back east, it's the cherry blossoms. You know, in Washington, they're looking for the cherry blossoms, having cherry blossom festivals, I'm sure, all around the country. Every late March to mid-April, the Japanese, where a lot of our cherry blossoms, our cherry trees come from, they watch for those delicate pink and white blossoms to erupt from awakening cherry trees. And it's a tradition that goes back many thousands of years. And they've got all kinds of records. Because of that, they know from their records just about when those blossoms should be happening. So if there's a change in season, they've got a long record of knowing, the blossoms are early this year, they're late this year. Well, with climate change, global warming upon us, scientists want to know the signs of global warming. How is global warming affecting the changing of the seasons? And they'll know that by looking at how the flowers are developing and at what time of the year. Are they late? Are they early? And they want to track the changes. And this is where you can come in. They would like to enlist you and your help watching your flowers and your plants in your backyard, keeping track of those changes and helping the scientists keep track of just how global warming is happening. Here to talk about that is Jake Walzin. Dr. Walzin is a senior scientist for the U.S. Geological Survey. He's also executive director of the U.S. National Phenology Network. That's a word we'll talk about at their National Coordinating Office in Tucson, Arizona. He joins us from a studio there. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Walzin.
Thank you. Thank you, Ira. Glad to be here.
Tell us what phenology is.
Phenology is a tough word. It's one we have to overcome every time we open our mouths and say phenology, and it's important to distinguish it from phrenology.
Oh, yeah.
Phenology, and we'll talk about that in a second. Phenology itself is simply the study of the timing of life cycle events for plants and animals. When do flowers come? When do leaves come on? When do leaves change color? When do you get that first robin in your backyard?
Yeah, so these are things that happen every year at a predictable time. More or less.
More or less predictable, yes, but they're seasonal events.
Seasonal events. And you're trying to enlist all of us to help you follow changes in those seasonal events.
We're trying to couple citizen scientists with scientists so we can work together to get the density of data that we need across the nation to track climate change.
Mm-hmm. This sort of data gathering has been in place internationally for a while, has it not?
Well, yes, we're a bit behind.
The UK Something networks, else we're a bit behind.
We're working on it. We're working on it. So, for example, in the UK and Britain, right, people track the timing of flowering, and they've been doing this for many, many years, bird arrivals, et cetera. In fact, they even track the timing of when they mow their lawns, which is a fantastic,
is that right?
Fantastic set of
data. Is that
data.
Right?
Yep. Just for the first time, just 2 years ago, people were actually having to go out and mow their lawns on the day after Christmas, Boxing Day, they call it, because of warming that's occurred in the British Isles, and you end up having to go out and mow the lawn after you open your presents.
Wow. So you're set up a network where we can be those kinds of people.
Yes, the network includes a number of different types of groups and organizations, federal agencies, state and local agencies, management organizations, non-governmental organizations, but really to get the density of data that we need for the nation, we need the public. We need volunteers, citizen scientists who can help us track climate change in their backyard.
1-800-989-8255. And our country was founded on citizen scientists, wasn't it?
Ben Franklin, in many ways, and the
Thoreaus and people like that.
Henry David Thoreau was out there as a phenologist. He was tracking the timing of 600 species of flowers around Concord and the Concord area and when he was on Walden Pond. We can actually go back and find his old records. We've got his diaries. We can go through them, look at the data that he has there, try to interpret his handwriting, mm-hmm, and then compare patterns that he saw in the 1850s to what we see right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say that I want to join this effort. I want to be a citizen scientist in my backyard. I have all kinds. I watch these every year. You know, I even think the onions are coming up early.
Crocuses, daffodils.
Yep. How do I become part of this movement here?
It's very easy. All you need to do is go to our webpage, usanpn.org, which is linked from your webpage, mm-hmm, and people can learn about phenology, learn about climate change and how they're related, click on participate. There's different ways that people can participate, and one of those is to become an observer, where you register yourself, register your site, add some plants there to the site online. You're not necessarily going to be planting anything. What's out there that you're familiar with, and follow the standardized protocols. So we have nationally standardized protocols, and enter the data online.
Yeah, I was looking at your site before, and I noticed that I have a prized dogwood tree in my backyard that would qualify.
Yes. Yes, yes. And we would love to get your data, Ira. Get out there. Let us know when the leaves come out, when the flowers come on, when the flowers end their flowering. And imagine a network of people who are tracking dogwoods just like you across the eastern U.S. Mm-hmm. and where dogwoods are growing and where they might grow in the future. Who knows? But then you can go online, and we're still working on some of this capability. We went live on Monday.
Right.
But you could go online and get a map and say, oh, where am I going to go to see the best dogwoods? Where are people reporting dogwoods through this national network? But it's scientifically based as well, so that scientists can be saying, I want the same information. What is the pattern, spatial pattern, the temporal pattern of dogwood flowering, of tulip poplars, of Mexican poppies, et cetera?
But one thing that troubles me is, you know, I'm not a great record keeper. I mean, and you're going to depend on me to keep records exactly of the day on this and everybody else?
We've actually been working on our interface, our user interface, and it's very straightforward and easy. Basically, what you do is when you go online and you have your site, you just come into the web page and you say, okay, did I make an observation? Yes or no? And if I did make an observation, did I see this event that was happening? So you can enter, if you'd like to, enter your data daily. Yeah. Or you can save your data and enter it. But what that does, the scientists like this particular approach or this tool because it gives them an estimate of how often you go out. We call that sampling density. And it also tells us whether or not you saw the event occurring. Did you see the first flower on your dogwood or not? It gives us absence data, which we can then use to develop models, predictive models, to then make predictions about when should we see lilacs or dogwoods next year.
You know what you might want to think about doing is making like a little app or something for an iPhone or for a MySpace or any of these places. A Facebook, they'll be right on there. You see it every day to remind you.
Yep. That's exactly we're working on it, Ira. We're working on it. In fact, if there's folks out there, if you're participating in the National Phenology Network as an observer, you're part of the National Phenology Network. We're trying to coordinate these activities. But if there are people who are out there who have these kinds of apps and might be interested in sharing them, make them available, we're into it.
All right, let's get some phone calls and we'll get some more questions here because I got a lot of them. 1-800-989-8255. Janice in Selma, Oregon, am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, it's Janice.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. So I had a suggestion. I'm a mail carrier, and every spring the bees come into the mailboxes. It happens about a certain time, and I imagine it probably happens to all mail carriers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I lived in Knoxville for several years, and we had ladybugs that would come into our houses, and they were often a problem. And it's a sure harbinger of spring and fall. And so, yes, we're actually – right now, the system that we have set up is focused mostly on plants because we're in the process of coordinating and collaborating with Fish and Wildlife Service and the Wildlife Society to build a wildlife monitoring program for next year. So
mail carriers would be perfect people for this, wouldn't they?
Sure,
they're seeing all the time. Janice, would you like to get involved in this?
Oh, I would do it. I don't like the bees, but I would certainly tell my postmaster, and she could probably email, you know, the big guy in the post office, and if everybody did that, it would be some pretty good information.
Maybe you could do the Crocus Patrol.
There you go.
You know, with something like that. She goes by all these houses all the time. She could see when they're all – they probably all pop up at the same time in the same neighborhood.
Yep, that's probably true.
Again, this National Mail Carrier Corps or really anybody, Boys and Girls Clubs, Nature Conservancy sites, Friends of the National Wildlife Refuge System. There's all sorts of different groups out there that might be really interested in tracking the timing of different events, plants and animals, landscapes even.
Isn't it a good idea? Someone on our Sci-Fi Twitter says, T.B. Bosham says, can I Twitter in my phenology observations?
We're working on it. We're working on it. As soon as we possibly can, try and take advantage of these social
networks. Get some volunteers quick.
Yeah.
You can't do everything.
Yeah, we'll go find Google and say, hey. So we're a .org. And so this is being spearheaded by the U.S. Geological Survey, but with National Science Foundation money, Fish and Wildlife Service monies, et cetera. But what we really are trying to do is partner. We need partners, industry, non-governmental organizations, Defenders of Wildlife, for example, other federal agencies. We work very closely with the Park Service. We're developing a national strategy so that we can have anybody and everybody. Well, and here's why. We're looking for 100,000 observers across the United States within just a few years mm-hmm. to be entering this data and turning it around and making it available to scientists who are interested in understanding how environment variation affects natural resources, management, invasive species, allergenic species. We'd like to be able to predict when allergens are occurring. And if we have people across the U.S. who are tracking a ragweed, we can actually develop some predictive tools and, again, another app where people can come online and learn more and find out when the allergies will be hitting their area.
Now, you know, it's a great idea because, you know, you just get tired of just saying, I'm brushing my teeth today, you know. In those social communities, you could say, I'm checking what the crocuses have just come up, that sort of thing. As you know, and I'm sure I don't have to tell you, so there are really some very serious gardeners out there.
You bet.
And they must have cigar boxes full of records, you know, of when they planted things or saw things coming up from years before, in the attic or something. Would you be interested in that kind of stuff?
We are interested in those kinds of data sets. So I get the question often, well, why are you starting a national monitoring network today? Wouldn't it have been great if you had done that, say, 30 years ago? And I answer, yes, if only. But we're starting now, and those legacy data sets or historic data sets, or sometimes even people call them shoebox data sets because that's where a lot of these data sets are stored, are very valuable, like Thoreau's data. Aldo Leopold was collecting phenology, not even necessarily knowing that was what he was doing per se, and other folks. And there's a lot of people out there who are go jogging and they've got a skunk cabbage data set, or they keep track of when they planted their bulbs in the fall and when the bulbs came up. Farmers who keep track of rainfall just on the barn door, or maybe when they harvested wheat. So there's lots of what we call historic data sets, and we are developing tools. So we're asking people to hold them for the time being or let us know about them.
Right.
We're developing tools so that people can come online and just say, here are my data that are useful now for scientists, and we're sharing it to the scientific community for understanding how climate change is affecting and shaping our nation.
How close is the link between blooming time linked to evidence of climate change?
This is called attribution, where you're attributing changes not just for a given organism, but for all organisms within a population or across an entire region, attributing that to changes in temperature. And there is a tight correlation. But it depends. Not all species respond the same. So some might have a very strong response. Others might have very little response. And what you can imagine, what happens is you end up with what we call a decoupling. You have systems that are potentially falling apart. They're no longer working in sync. They're working at different times. So if you have mutualisms where you have one organism working with another, or pollinators that are waiting for flower nectar, or you have bees, again, that are depending on flowers, if the timing is off, you can end up with a system that falls apart.
Talking about phenology this hour on Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow talking with Jake Weldzien. Let's go to the phones. Lots of people want to talk about this, of course. John in Grand Rapids. Hi, John.
Hi, Ira.
Hi there.
Thank you for taking my call. I was most intrigued to hear about this. We have a small public radio station in our town, and I have been doing a program on phenology for 25 years. In fact, I'm celebrating my 25th year of phenology this year.
Oh, mazel tov.
And I have 25 years of records that might be interesting to your guest.
They would be, and we know about your radio show.
What's your show called, John?
Oh, I call it the Phenology Show.
An apt name.
Oddly enough. Yep. And so many listeners in northern Minnesota are well acquainted with phenology.
That's great. So you can get his data from him.
We would be happy. We'll provide a link to your show on our webpage. We'll get it up there right away. It was there, and we'll get it right up there, right in front and center. And I'd love to talk to you more about the types of data and the people you've got who are tracking phenology in a region.
Right. I would be honored to provide you with that information. And Ira, I know you have talked in the past about Twitter. I'm a 60-year-old fellow and a mail carrier, by the way. But my son has introduced me to Twitter, and if people would like to Twitter me with their information, they can go to twitter.com/phenology.
There you go.
And I can get that information into my records as well as maybe pass it along to the Phenology Network.
There you go. Thanks for calling, John. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations. 1-800-989-8825. I'll even get a quick call, and I'm rushing to get to Mike in Chicago. Hi, Mike.
Oh, hi. Hey. I'm a nature photographer, and I'm frequently keeping track of my own and my own sort of database of all the things that bloom and all the times, not as, I don't think, specifically as accurately, but it ranges. It seems to range. Like, I remember, like, 10 years ago or 9 years ago, tax day was a big day for Virginia bluebells at a certain location, and that was early. And then the next year, it was like 2.5 weeks later, and it just jumps around so much. I kind of wonder how, you know.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, sure.
I could address that.
Sure.
There's a lot of variation from 1 year to the next. And so if you're looking for a 30-year signal, you have to be able to account for that variation. So there's some pretty advanced statistical techniques that we use to do trend analysis. Mm-hmm. But a cold spring is a cold spring.
Yeah. Let me get a quick call. And Katie in Walla Walla. I've always wanted to say that on Science Friday. Walla Walla, Washington.
Thanks, Ira.
Quickly.
I'm a homeschool mom, and I really would like to applaud your guest for bringing this to the community because it's an excellent tool to bring our kids into the scientific community, to train them as future scientists and present scientists, and to reinforce that notion, that philosophy, that school and learning doesn't take place inside of four walls, but rather is all around us all the time.
Informal science
education. So it's an opportunity for school-age kids to participate.
Yeah, we should get all these schools involved. Great idea. And people who do homeschooling.
It's a terrific opportunity to encourage scientific observation, to reinforce data entry, and also great vocabulary lessons.
good luck. Thank you, Katie. That was good. That was a good point. Thanks. Have a good weekend. Yeah, instead of just blowing things up in science class, we could show that you could go out and collect data and make observations like real scientists.
Sure. Yeah, we welcome schools. It's a fantastic way to connect people with nature, get kids outside, more kids in the woods,
and so
because it's easy.
And so the site's up and running, and we can go check in now and become partners.
Sign up today.
So Jack Waltzien is Jake. I'm sorry, Jake.
Yes.
Jake Waltzien is a scientist for the U.S. Geological Survey, and he's also executive director of the USA National Phenology Network at the National Coordinating Office in Tucson. Thank you, Jake, for taking time to be with us today. And we hope to send a lot of traffic to your website and get a lot of people involved in this.
Send them on. We're ready for them.
Ready for them. All right. Stay with us. We're gonna switch gears, take a short break, and we're going to talk about this disease that is killing bats all over upstate New York, and it is spreading to other parts of the Northeast, and some clues and some interesting ideas on how to combat those deaths. We'll talk about it after this break, so stay with us. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR News.